Hey, you're listening to Coast to Coast and KT and the Friend Man. It's the second round of the playoffs in what was supposed to be one of the best second rounds of all time because of competitive and the Celtics are already toast. But other than that, it's been a great wild ride, when you say, Alex.
Yeah, I mean, first off, it's been a while. I don't really remember when our last podcast was, but
I actually do.
what?
Because it's funny because it was the week before I was gonna go to Boston, and we
Oh,
were
wow.
talking about like the next one you might like hear us at the same place. It won't even be coast to coast because we'll record one in Boston, and not only did we not record one in Boston, we just did not record one for the next like month.
Well, that's how it goes sometimes. A lot of things happened. I graduated college. Kyle tore his ACL in half. We are
Yep.
briefly on the same coast, different cities, and a lot of things happened in the NBA as well, aside from our own personal little journeys.
Yeah, there's like so much. I mean, just to recap, OKC is still terrible, like
Wow,
absolutely terrible.
that feels like ancient history at this point.
Yeah, after all that, after them talking so much in the series, OKC has fallen. The Pacers have fallen. The Pistons, the Jazz, so many teams have bit the dust.
All of them. And that, I mean, it's good because at this point we got the real contenders left. We kind of knew we were going to get to this group of teams anyway. So I don't know. This feels right. This is kind of what you build towards all season. You don't really think about the first round of playoffs so much.
Yeah, it's like the warm-up round.
Yeah. And
And
we're
yeah.
hopping at a good time too because a lot of these things are kind of coming to a head right now. Obviously, we have two game sevens locked in for this Sunday. Maybe a third, probably a third. But I guess that's a good place to start. With the Rockets and the Warriors. Obviously, Kevin Durant is injured, which makes the Warriors 3-2 lead look a lot less controlling. There's obviously kind of a lot to unpack here, but I think my biggest thing is that the Warriors are just are they underdogs at this point? Is that fair, or how do you see the stakes of
No,
the
I
series?
wouldn't call them underdogs, but what I would say is that they have vastly been underperforming. There's no reason that they should have let the Clippers give them six games, even though honestly, props to the Clippers though. Shout out them. I must say I became a little bit of a Clippers fan this off season,
Of
or even
course.
throughout the regular season, just because they just come out, they play hard, like they don't care who they're playing. They don't care how much they're down by, which would lead to them coming back from a 31-point deficit. They're just gonna keep playing hard, and it's just really great to see. So, but back to the Warriors, never should have let them get to seven, six games, regardless. And just even playing this like Rocket series, Kevin Durant has on a number of occasions just had to absolutely bail them out, and for a team that's like clearly or supposed to be clearly the best team of all time. Just inexcusable for I would say. Like, you have Kevin
No.
Durant actually being the first person to average have a 50-40-90 season in the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm gonna be honest though. I understand they still have Steph, and they still have Klay, and they still have Draymond, but you take KD out of these next two games, this Warriors team is like emaciated. Thin is not even a strong enough word for it. If you look at just who they've been playing this in the series so far, I honestly have no idea who's going to pick up KD's 40 minutes a game because Andre Iguodala is already playing 34. His 35-year-old ass probably can't take much more than that. Jonas Jerebko is the next wing up after that. Alphonso McKinney, both of those dudes are averaging under 10 minutes a game. I don't see how they kind of make it through this without either Steph or Klay or both of them going absolutely kind of supernova on the Rockets over the next couple games.
Right. But yeah, it's basically going to come down to Steph, who has been bad these playoffs, just straight up bad, and that's why a lot of it has fallen on Kevin Durant so far. Because I mean, Steph Curry has not been anything like himself, and of course, like every year they'll say like Steph Curry's hurt, Steph Curry's that, but what? Like he's averaging this postseason 24 points, 44% from the field, 37% from three, which is like, not terrible numbers, but this is the playoffs. Like, it's winning time. And I'm sure, I think Brilliant's numbers are even worse in this Rocket series. I want to say only averaging like 18 points or so, worse shooting percentages than that.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at it right now. So the dude is averaging, he's averaging 22 points and 5 assists, 4.5 rebounds, but the percentages are just horrible. He's shooting 39 from the field, 39% from the field, 26% from three. That's not going to cut it. If they want to win this, I'd be scared. This really kind of feels like the Warriors' last stand. I mean, they've been dominating the league for what, 4 or 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And now it just kind of seems like they got the last few members of their team making this last stand against the league. I kind of hope, just for drama's sake, that they win and we get to see them in the finals one more time. But yeah, I wouldn't be shocked at all if they bowed out to the Rockets.
For drama's sake, I hope that they drop the next two games and they just implode after that.
Yeah. I mean, do you think KD is gone? No matter what, do you think he's gone?
I think no matter what, he's out of here. I just think for a player like Kevin Durant, who obviously cares so much about what people are saying about him, it has, I'm sure, bothered him immensely how no matter what he does, no matter what crazy stats he puts up, no matter how good he is offensively, which is absolutely, you know, unstoppable offensively, and on any other team, you know, people would still be like praising him like no other, but just like there's always an asterisk around anything that he does, because it's like, well, he's on the Warriors and it's just too easy for him, and that's why he's not gonna be better than LeBron, because blah 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 blah, his teammates are too good, he's supposed to be doing all these things.
Yeah, and it's a shame too, because he really has kind of looked like the best player in the NBA over the past 2-3 weeks or so. I mean, you just kind of see you watch him and all you can think of is like unfair. That's like the only adjective that comes to my mind when I watch him. Cause he's just, in all kind of the jokes and the Twitter memes about him, you kind of forget that the dude is just a serial killer on the court. He can just get a bucket from wherever he wants. I don't know what defender in the league is built to stop him. It's kind of a shame that it's kind of been lost under this whole Warriors and 4 All-Stars deal.
Well, it hasn't been lost, because there are some points to it, in a sense. You know, I'm a certified Warriors hater, so I will say all the time that, like, yeah, it's easier for him to do all this stuff surrounded by these kind of players and in the system. So we'll see. You know, maybe he'll go to, like, the Knicks next year, and we'll see how that takes him, see if he can do the same kind of stuff.
Yeah, but on the other side of the coin, what have you thought of the Rockets? I mean, James Harden has been doing his thing. He's averaging 35 points a game, 7 rebounds, 6 assists so far. Decent percentages, not amazing, but on the volume he's shooting at, can't really knock him. I'm kind of more mystified by, I guess not mystified, because we kind of saw this happening in the regular season. Chris Paul is not, it's not the Chris Paul we know. The dude is only averaging 15 points a game, 6.5 assists, shooting horribly, under 40% from the field, under 30% from three. This is not like a two-star situation. I mean, I don't think it's even that arguable that Eric Gordon's been the better player.
Oh yeah, Eric Gordon turned up in their the game before their last one and was just splashing threes. He had a great performance, and yeah, if you're the Rockets, you're looking at how Chris Paul is playing right now, you should be afraid, because this is what, the first year on that Supermax contract that they gave him.
Yeah, it's not looking good. I don't really see how he can't live up to the value of it, right? It was just kind of one of those things they had to do to keep him around in the hopes they could make this one last run, but I don't know.
I guess. I mean, it seems like it's just ending up like the John Wall, where it's like, yeah, it's what you have to do, but I mean, is it? And you end up just crippling your team financially throughout this entire contract. You're not going to be able to trade him, because he's only going downhill from here, and he's hardly even helping out as it is.
Right.
I mean, if we're talking about just like value per minute, Austin Rivers has probably been doing a better job than Chris Paul.
Austin Rivers, who, it should be noted, started the season as a Washington Wizard. This has been a long season, even talking about that. But yeah, I mean, kind of lost in this too is, I think we got to note how PJ Tucker has been absolutely turning up.
He's been great.
He's like the definition of role player and like the ideal vision of what that of a role player can be. The dude's averaging 47% from 3-point range in the playoffs, 9 rebounds a game, playing just monster defense. Without him, I certainly don't think they're here, especially with the way kind of Clint Capella has kind of faded into the background so far.
Yeah, Clint Capella has really been getting played out of the series, which is unfortunate. But yeah, PJ Tucker has been doing a fantastic job. And that's like on guarding Kevin Durant and just like doing all the little things, keeping balls alive and just like the hustle play. Like you can tell like PJ Tucker is one of the people that like desperately wants this championship and wants his run to keep going. And yeah, it's been great. I'm glad that, you know, James Harden hasn't completely faded like he does every year. But they're going to need Chris Paul at the end of the day, and they're going to need to keep playing. They've been playing pretty good defense so far, and they're going to need to keep that up too.
Yeah, agreed. Kind of moving on to the next series here, we want to talk about, I think Raptors Sixers is probably the second most enticing. Is that fair so far? Yeah, it's just I totally get the Blazers and Nuggets are a great series too, but they don't quite have like the brand name appeal of the Raptors Sixers series thus far. You got any initial thoughts on that?
On initial thought is Kawhi Leonard. Oh my God! Like,
honestly, where do you put him in terms of like best players in the league? Is he in your top three?
I feel like he has to be. When you have someone who on one side of the court will guard anyone 1 through 4 and completely neutralize them, and then you have on the other side someone who can put up 30 points on absolutely absurd shooting percentages. Mm-hmm. And it's almost to the point where it's like if he gets into the mid-range and he's fading away, it's not about whether you make it miss or not. He's just either off or on, and that's it. He always gets to his spot. He's crafty. I mean, he's been absolutely ridiculous this offseason, and it's good to see because people forget. You know, you miss one playoffs, you miss a season, and people how quickly they forget. Like, people have already completely forgotten about LeBron because he's not in the playoffs. And yeah, people want to crown anyone already as the new best player and whatever, but he's definitely got to be in the top three. If I was naming a top three right now, it had to be LeBron, KD, and Kawhi.
Yeah. All right, so you're still leaving Giannis out of that top group?
I am still leaving Giannis out of that because I think to some extent you can game plan a Giannis, and that's what the Celtics at least did in game one. You know, Giannis was essentially just completely ineffective. And then, you know, the Celtics failed to do literally anything good for the rest of the series. But for players like LeBron, Kawhi, KD, they'll really kill you with so much more than just driving to the rim and being just like that kind of unstoppable. If their shots are on, like they'll just shoot over you. They'll get to their spots. And there's just nothing that you can do about it, no matter how many people you send.
Yeah, that's a good point. With LeBron and KD and Kawhi, there really is – they're kind of just going to get theirs, and you can't really spend too much energy even trying to stop them. I mean, obviously you want to slow them down, but with someone like Giannis, as dominant as he is, you kind of know how you want to handle him. You know the holes in his game that you can try your best to exploit, even if it's hard. These other dudes, like you said, it's pretty much nothing. They're going to do what they do, and you just got to hope everyone around them doesn't step up either.
Yes.
My question from all this has been, I really don't understand Ben Simmons at all. He was doing pretty poorly in the series, but then yesterday he really showed out. I think he shot 9 for 13 from the field, had a pretty well-rounded game. Overall was just kind of making his presence felt, which you could not say for the other games in this series. Here's one question, maybe not directly related to the series, but if the Sixers bow out, what are the odds you think that Ben Simmons gets moved this summer? I mean, obviously low, but
I mean, I don't know.
Especially with the Pelicans and AD situation, that seems almost like a perfect little swap there.
So you think they look to package up Ben Simmons and see if they could get Anthony Davis?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how that fit works either. I don't know if with Tobias Harris and obviously Joel Embiid's going to be there for a while, but
I mean, I think that'd look pretty scary if your starting lineup features Joel, Anthony Davis, Tobias Harris.
Yeah, and I don't know if I read an article earlier this week. I think it was on The Ringer, maybe. It's basically about how Ben Simmons is a center, and I haven't looked into it enough to know if I agree totally with the author, but it's pretty convincing point. I mean, with Ben Simmons as your point guard, once you kind of get past the whole shock appeal of having a 6'10 dude running point for your team, it kind of causes problems. I mean, if your point guard literally will not shoot from three, let alone the fact that...
Not even from three, like from 10 feet out.
From anywhere, yeah. It's just very hard to design a team like that. And you've kind of seen the awkwardly fit these players around him. I mean, you kind of need shooting at every other position if Ben Simmons is going to be your point guard. Yeah. But if you put him at center, I don't know. That's kind of some nightmare situations right there, getting Ben Simmons the ball on short pick and rolls like that, letting him make quick decisions. I could kind of see it. I feel like Ben Simmons' pride will never let him accept that, but who knows? Could be the most ideal version of himself.
Yeah, I can see that, but it's also like you kind of have to have the ball in Ben Simmons' hands or he's like nothing on offense.
You're right, but we've seen centers to do that. I mean, look in the next series ahead, Nikola Jokic, right? Maybe, obviously they're totally different players, but I don't know. We might just need to kind of rethink who Ben Simmons is as a basketball player. He might not necessarily be the dude who's at the top of the key, you know?
Another thing Ben Simmons needs to be rethinking is what he spends his offseason on. Because you cannot come back not being able to shoot a mid-range jump shot, period. Well,
my favorite thing is how they always ask coaches and stuff, and they're like, oh, yeah, he takes those shots in practice. Like, he's always working on it in the gym. And it's like, I really do not believe you guys at all, because there's no chance a dude will not even take a single three if it's something he works on in practice and if it's something he is kind of constantly working on throughout the season. It's obviously right. Something else going on. I don't know what it is. It's kind of beyond bizarre at this point, but you're right. It's almost kind of inexcusable if he comes out of this offseason without some change to his shooting.
But if the Sixers do fall, I think the Sixers will be looking to move Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid, because it depends. Like every single year, it's the same story. Joel Embiid obviously is a freak of a basketball talent and, you know, best center in the league. But every single year over year, it's these injuries concerns, and the Sixers may just look at it and be like, we might want these injuries to be someone else's problem. And because it's every year, like he's not even playing the minutes or with the same aggressiveness that the Sixers need him to be.
Yeah.
For them to be able to really win this series. Like he's had a couple of games where he hasn't even taken 10 shots. Like,
right, right. Yeah. And I totally get that some of this has been like this weird like illness thing going around the Sixers locker room, but I just think back to the regular season. I remember we would clown the Raptors all the time for their load management for Kawhi, but I mean, now look at what's going on. Kawhi's turning up on everyone, and Joel Embiid, I don't think he had anything that structured in place in terms of his rest. I mean, I know they try to take it easy on him, but it seems like with a dude like that, you have to have such a concerted strategic plan from the beginning of the year in terms of how you're going to keep him fresh for right now. And
yeah, like he's got to be playing like honestly like 60 games,
right?
Like that's got to be just like built into what he's gonna do, because it's every postseason that it seems that, you know, there's always something. His knees obviously break down every time during this year, but now he's dealing with sickness and it's like just a mess, and every year it's always something. So
yeah, and this is a good funny little tidbit I saw this week too. So I'm trying to remember what it was. One of the rookies. Landry Shamet was talking about earlier this year about like his rookie hazing. And before every trip, he has to get Chick-fil-A for the whole team. I mean, obviously he's traded now to the Clippers, but while he's on the Sixers, he'd have to get Chick-fil-A for the whole team. And Joel Embiid would always order 4 milkshakes from Chick-fil-A and just pound them over the course of the flight. Bro, that is like 2000 calories of just straight ice cream.
Yeah.
Every plane ride. So who knows, man? He's a goofy dude. I wouldn't be surprised if his diet and kind of personal discipline are a little lacking as well.
Yeah, I would definitely believe it.
And by the way, is this a good time for us to come out as the Joel Embiid might not actually be that funny camp?
Oh, yeah. I was talking about this with my parents the other day, where I was just like, it's just annoying at this point. Like, his demeanor is like everything's a joke attitude. All the talk that he has, and he backs it up some of the time. Like, I'm just over it. The entire Sixers in general just aren't that endearing, especially when you have absolute assholes like Ben Simmons and Jimmy Butler.
Right.
It's just all lost at this point. Like, the Sixers have quickly become a very unlikable team.
Yeah, kind of agreed. Ben Simmons, I think, fits into this villain role pretty easily. Jimmy Butler just seems like kind of a douche. I mean, Tobias Harris seems like a nice enough guy, and
He
Boban, that
seems
whole
like a good
friendship
guy,
is too
yeah.
adorable. But honestly, I kind of want him to just get him out of here so we can turn them into the full villains of the East.
Yeah, well, it would be dire. I mean, the Sixers would really be making a mistake to re-sign Jimmy Butler, who I might add, though, is basically saving their playoff hopes because he's been turning up for them, and really is like one, at least one game for them with how he played in like the fourth quarter and some of the defense that he's been able to play.
Right. I mean, it kind of seems like, just thinking about the playoffs so far, the teams that are winning are the ones who are last until this point are the ones with that dynamic wing player, right? So you have Kawhi kind of dragging the Raptors along. You have Jimmy Butler doing his best to drag the Sixers along. KD obviously has been doing his thing for the Warriors. I guess Giannis might not be a wing, but it just kind of seems like you need one in this day and age if you want to go far in the playoffs. I mean, obviously that's not the rule, but I don't know. I guess the counterpoint to that would be moving on to the next series, where the best player has been Nikola Jokic, like a 6'11" pudgy dude who's just been absolutely turning up. What have you thought of Blazers Nuggets so far?
Did you, yeah, oh, you didn't catch the quadruple overtime, did you?
I did not stay up for it.
Yo, that was so ridiculous. I could not even believe it, honestly. Like, I was just watching and I was like, no, they can't go to another overtime. They can't go to another overtime. They can't go to another overtime. Like, Nikola Jokic playing 65 minutes in that quadruple overtime, like, is. I mean, it was an all. I mean, it was a historic game. Like, it was honestly absurd.
I think if it reached a fifth overtime, just based on the clips I saw, I'm pretty sure Jokic would have probably just died on the court.
Oh, he could not. He could not have been any more, like, played any more minutes at
Yeah.
all.
So have you seen Creed, right? You know, like near the end of the movie where during the big fight, where he's just getting absolute shit kicked out of him, and he's like bleeding and like can barely get out of his corner. That's how I imagine Jokic probably was every time Mike Malone was yelling at him to get back on the
Yeah.
court for another 5 minutes.
Right. And he's like over on the side, just like throwing the towel.
Yeah, but I mean, jokes aside, I think there's a very real case to be made that Jokic has been the best player of this round. He's averaging 27 points, 14 rebounds, and 9 assists. That's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, he's absolutely incredible. I think I just don't really like how the Nuggets play. I don't know.
Do you hate
I just
Jamal
like
Murray?
watch. I just like watch their offense, and I just see like Jokic just do like dribble handoffs to like Jamal Murray like a million times a game, and I feel like they just run the exact same sets like over and over and over again, and it works. Like, clearly, they have this winning, but like, I'll die on this hill that the Nuggets really aren't that good. They just have a ho actual real home court advantage, which is why year over year they have the best home record. Like in or one of the best this year, they did have the best home record in the NBA, and then their road record is always like 500 or below 500. Like,
Yeah, it's kind of weird it shook out this way too, just because either the Blazers or the Nuggets are going to be in the conference finals, but I don't those neither one of those teams seems like they're one of the best four teams in the NBA. You know, it's I'm glad we're seeing the Rockets and the Warriors kind of duke it out right now, but the stakes just seem much higher on that end of the bracket than they are on this Denver Portland side of it.
yeah, I mean, the Rockets and the Warriors have to treat this like it's the finals, and winner this is winning the championship.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I don't I can't really tell how it's going to work out. Part of me thinks that whoever wins the Rockets Warriors series will kind of be limping out of that, kind of taking a lot of hits over the past 7 games, while the other team might, I don't know if they'll have gone seven games too, obviously, but not playing quite the same caliber of opponent. But I just have a feeling that whoever wins the Rockets Warriors game is just going to blow the other team out of the water next round.
Do you have any predictions, actually? I guess we can backtrack a little bit and bring it back up to Nuggets Trailblazers. Who are you predicting for Rockets Warriors? Who do you think makes it out?
I think the Rockets are going to win, to be honest with you. I think they're going to win this game tonight, and then I think they're going to win game seven without KD. I just don't think the depth is there. And then for the Blazers and the Nuggets, I think the Nuggets are going to take this game seven. And I'll take the Rockets over them in six, I think. What about your Western Conference?
I'm taking the Rockets for sure. Well, yeah, I mean, for sure enough. But I'm taking the Rockets just because, yeah, I think they are going to win tonight. I think James Harden's going to have a big game to make sure that they seal it, and then they're going to go back to Oracle. And the Warriors aren't going to have Kevin Durant at the end of games to basically, like, score the last 10 points and just go ridiculous. And Steph Curry has not shown me anything in this postseason that he's, like, really been playing like himself.
Right. Right. So then who do you got coming out of the Denver series?
I'm taking the Trailblazers just because I absolutely love the intensity that Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum are playing with. Damian Lillard is, like, pulling up from hell, splashing threes. Like, I think he's shooting over 50% on like 35 footers, which is ridiculous.
He has to be one of the coolest players in the league, if not the coolest.
Yeah, I'm a big Damian Lillard fan these days.
How could you not? Yeah.
And especially like all this talk about, he just like wants to stay in Portland, you know, loyalty. You know, you love to see it. And CJ McCollum has been turning up, Cantor's been turning up, and somewhere LeBron James is absolutely flabbergasted by how Rodney Hood has been playing this postseason in this series.
So I'm assuming you got the Rockets or the Blazers next round, or
yeah, and then I'm picking the Rockets to make it to the finals.
Right. So kind of shifting over to the East. That could set up pretty nicely. I mean, I got the Bucks coming out of the East. You got Giannis, James Harden in the finals. That's a little MVP showdown. I don't know when we've had that before. Well, that's probably not true. Steph and LeBron.
You have the Raptors taking the Sixers, and then you have the Bucks being the Raptors.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go another way, and I'm going to say the Raptors get to the finals. Just from what I saw from the Celtics-Bucks series, which we'll get to, the Bucks defense, while they do like have a pretty good, they're pretty good switches and like a swarming defense in general, the Celtics just ended up missing a ton of open threes. Nothing could fall. Our offense was just stagnant. And just from what I see from the Raptors, like when they turn it on, they're moving the ball, they're nailing open shots. Like the Bucks defense has kind of always been predicated on, well, we're going to clog the paint and kind of let them shoot, which I don't think is going to work very well at all against the Raptors. Mm-hmm. And I think between like Kawhi, Marcus Gasol, Danny Green, like Pascal Siakam, they have a pretty serious defensive lineup that might make it a little too difficult for Giannis. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if the Raptors just had the Bucks number and ended up winning in like five or six.
Right. I could definitely see the Raptors moving on as well, but just I guess it is a good segue into the tragic topic of the week, the Celtics series. Just the way the Bucks manhandled that team. I know the Celtics had their problems, but they just look dominant after that game one loss. And if they can keep that same energy going against the Raptors, who I honestly don't think are that much better than the Celtics, I think we'll have a good shot. But yeah, do we want to move over to the Celtics series and give a little eulogy for this season from hell?
Oh, I absolutely would love to.
Okay.
I don't even know where to begin. Honestly, we started 10 for 10 on the season. And, you know, after that, we was like, okay, we just got to figure some things out. Gordon Hayward's not playing like how he used to. You know, he's not, like, looking the same. So, all right, we'll tweak some things. We'll figure it out. It'll be fine. Oh, God, just nothing was fine. All season. I mean, Kyrie started the season saying the right things. Obviously, he had that conference, a little bit of talking at the season ticket holder, where he was like, you know, if you guys will have me back, I'll definitely re-sign. Like, it was all great until things actually started going bad. And then he got more fed up with the press and I guess being a leader in general, and obviously leading to his comment in February of, you know, ask me July 1st, and which just added more fuel to the fire. The locker room already seemed to be falling apart. People were playing bad. It was slumps everywhere. We, you know, beat the Warriors by 30 and then go on like a 3-game losing streak to like the Suns and the Bulls, and lose to the Lakers at a buzzer beater, and then come back and lose to the Clippers after being up like 30 points.
Right.
So just a roller coaster of a season. And, you know, basically the entire regular season, it was like Kyrie spearheading and saying like, just wait for the playoffs. Like, you know, we'll figure it out. And when it really matters, like, we'll turn up. And so, you know, that's what everyone was holding their, hanging their hat on. And that's what everyone like still kind of believed, even though for the entire regular season, the Celtics really did not look that good. But it was like, oh, in the playoffs, when people aren't looking to get their numbers or like this, you know, we'll flip the switch and be a good basketball team. And what you saw was, I mean, in the first round, it was basically, you know, the Pacers just did not have their best player and their offense would go stagnant. They still looked like the top three defense that they were during the regular season, but at the end of the day, they just did not have the Victor Oladipo to put them over the top, and that's why they got swept. And then for game one of the Bucks series, you have the Celtics stealing that game, looking like the team that, you know, we always thought they could be. Kyrie played great. Everyone really just had a great, great game with Kyrie, you know, had like 26 points, shooting 57% from the field, 40 from three, 11 assists, 7 rebounds. Like, it was just the perfect game to show, like, these are the Celtics. This is the team that we were, like, had waiting underneath all along. And everyone, yeah, who doubted us and doubted Kyrie can, you know, go fuck themselves. But, and then immediately after that, there was just simply nothing that the Celtics could do. I wasn't really, really concerned when they lost game two, because I was like, okay, the Bucks were going to come out and play like crazy, because they obviously cannot drop both games on their home court. So yeah, I was like, all right, we did our job. We got one. We're going back to Boston. We'll be great. But honestly, like, how everything came together, like, this postseason was on Kyrie Irving. And, like, point blank, period. He had the worst 4-game stretch that I had seen. It was one of the worst 4-game stretches that he had ever had in his career. He went 8-for-22 in the game three against the Bucks. And, you know, that's when he came out and was like, yeah, you guys aren't going to see another 8-for-22 game from me. And then proceeded to go 7-for-22 the very next game, which, you know, we obviously lost because we ended up losing 4 in a row. And then the game after, 7-for-22 in the elimination game, down 3-1. Kyrie goes 6-for-21, just looks completely uninterested, taking terrible shots, not playing defense. Like, it was just bizarre. And it was the entire season summed up in, you know, basically these 4 games in a row that we lost, of just disjointed basketball, not playing defense, nobody communicating, and just missing open shots and missing opportunities. And, you know, what it really boils down to is this team just did not have heart. They did not band together. And it falls on Kyrie Irving as the leader that he was. I mean, just had a terrible leadership style all season. And it really leaves a bad taste in my and Celtics fans' mouths, where it's just like, yeah, whether you stay or whether you go, like, I think we'll figure it out either way. And this just leadership style was terrible. And honestly, I'm leaning more to the sides of forget Kyrie, we'll put the money somewhere else and just kind of make it work with that.
Wow. That felt cathartic. So I'm glad you could get that out there. It was just honestly what was weird from the outside looking in. I mean, I'll go to Kyrie stuff in a second, but what was just bizarre to me was that Kyrie said that no one can beat us in 7 games. Yep. And that had obviously been the opposite of true all season. You guys, maybe no one could beat you in 1 game, or I'd take you guys in any single game against the Warriors, against the Rockets, or whoever. But over 7 games, I would never trust this season's Celtics to somehow come out on top 4 times. And it was just very bizarre to me that Kyrie kind of hung his hat on that as their hope, is that they would be able to kind of take on these teams with enough opportunities. And at this point, I think you're right. I think it's going to be better if Kyrie walks. I don't know where that leaves you guys in terms of assets. I don't know if that makes AD still a possibility for you. But I really have never seen a fan base quite so eager to drive their own star player to the airport.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's just Kyrie's arrogance all season that makes it worse. I mean, Kyrie, yeah, of course, saying no one can beat us in a 7-game series, even though we've shown no type of consistency all year. Him talking about how special he is as a basketball player and how, you know, no matter what, he can get his shots off and, you know, no one he's on, like, there's nothing that anyone can do, how much of a basketball genius he is, how just, like, left and right, all talk, and then just when it really came down to it, like, there was nothing. And this was really an embarrassment for Kyrie in the postseason. Having his first postseason without LeBron James, like, it's really looking like playoff Kyrie is mythological. And, you know, without a best player of all time standing right next to him, like, he can't be the guy. And that's what if he does end up going to New York and joining Kevin Durant, I'm sure he'll thrive, because it seems like he's just a second fiddle type player.
It has been absolutely brutal for Kyrie's PR team over the past week. I will tell you that much. This dude's image has gone right in the toilet. And I think before this, Kyrie versus Damian Lillard was a very even argument. At this point, I don't see how you don't take Damian Lillard over Kyrie every time.
Oh, yeah, no question. No question.
Right.
Because, I mean, because it really boiled down to, like, Kyrie had, you know, the playoffs and – you know, he hit the shot against the Warriors. Damian Lillard maybe had, like, you know, one of the best game or series winners, probably, like, the best series winner of all time versus OKC. Just, like, 35 feet out, Paul George in his face, just sidestep to the right, nothing but net, wave him off. Like, I mean, Damian Lillard has really turned up this playoffs and has been leading the Trailblazers without their third best player in Nurkic to just, you know, fucking these teams up.
Right.
I think he's going to have a big game versus the Nuggets.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of about like 50 minutes right now, so I guess we should wrap up. But kind of going forward, how are you feeling about the Celtics going into next offseason? I mean, you got some pieces, obviously. You have Danny Ainge, who's the shrewdest GM in the league, most likely. Are you feeling good about where things are going next offseason, or do you think it's going to be a little bit of a downhill?
I mean, I feel good about every offseason with Danny Ainge manning the ship. Like, I think that he does a good job. And, I mean, going forward, like, there's no way that anyone could have predicted that this was going to happen in this season. So, like, that's not on him. I hope Brad Stevens learned a lot this season, because he did not do a good job at all tempering emotions or, like, getting people to really buy into their roles. So I hope we all come back better. We still, you know, assuming Kyrie does walk, Al Horford has a chance to, like, opt in or opt out to his contract. But, you know, at the end of the day, we still have the core of Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart. And, you know, I generally feel good about that. And I still feel good that Danny Ainge will make the right moves, because I'm sure he's already working the phones to see what he can get. We have like 4 draft picks in this next upcoming draft. And I don't know if we'll still trade for Anthony Davis with Kyrie possibly leaving. So it's really so incredibly up in the air, but you know, I have hope. I have faith.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of think you guys would be fine too.
I still think we have good setup for the future. It's just, for the in the first season in at least like 5 or 6 years that had high actually had expectations and had the opportunity for disappointment, this was the most disappointing season that I have seen as a basketball fan of the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, it was quite a ride. Let me tell you, from October until now, Celtics really kept us guessing. Gotta give them props for that.
Years off of my life, Alexander.
All right. Well, we got potentially three game sevens on Sunday. I'm guessing we should probably do a podcast after all that sorts itself out.
Oh, certainly.
Monday or so. But yeah, we'll be back recording a little bit more regularly now that we have a lot less going on, especially for the next month or so.
Yeah, it's good to be back. Basketball is about to be wrapping up in general, and it's going to be nothing but baseball. Oh, my God.
My favorite. But oh, we got the draft, though, and the lottery coming up next week. So
yeah,
you don't have to fret too much. All right, bro. Good talking to you.
All right. Yeah. No, we're back. Coast to coast. Katie and the Fran, man.
Yep. And I'll see you on the other side of these game sevens, man. May the best teams win.
Absolutely.
Later.
Later.